Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast that's not boring, it's not too interesting, it's just interesting enough. I'm Martin, and today, as always, I'm joined by Alex.
Hello, Martin.
And Robin.
Hello, Martin. Hello. Hey. How are you?
Very well, thank you. How are you? Well, I'm not actually.
Oh dear.
Oh,
that's
no.
A nasty cough.
I'm just going to be coughing all the way through this. Does someone else want to host it?
That's all right. We'll share the load. The problem is, it's that time of
year, isn't it?
Where we get cold and then we get colds. That's the problem.
Exactly.
And right now, at the time of recording this, the UK is in the terrifying grip of Hurricane Arwen. Liv Tyler has come back for revenge against the UK, and she's freezing all of us to death with actual snow that might stay more than a day if you're lucky enough to live far enough north and be freezing enough to actually have snow that doesn't melt after a few hours, which one of us in this podcast might be.
We've had a light dusting up in Edinburgh, but nothing major that's settled. I hope we get snow soon, though. That's the main reason I moved to Scotland. I feel like I haven't seen proper snow in ages, you know, and I'd quite like to.
So if you don't get any snow this Christmas, Alex, will you be voting no in the next independence referendum?
Because I'm moving back to England. Yeah.
Lies.
Back to England.
Apparently on the Scottish Independence Party, they've gone and written "we get snow" on the side of buses, so it better be true.
Everyone knows that whatever goes on the side of a bus is true.
It's right on the side of the bus, it goes down in the annals of history as being the truth.
100% true.
All the
promises made, promises delivered.
We'll get all the snow days and make England pay for it.
So how have you both been? You've been all right?
Good. Not as bad as you, but I've got a bit of a cold as well.
It's not bad. I'm making the most of it.
It sounds bad, so you have my sympathy and my pity.
Well, it's not COVID. That's the main thing.
In today's world, people with colds, you just look out with suspicion and you've got like a crucifix holding up to them. Stay back.
Alex, crucifixes don't work against viruses. I hope you know that.
Yeah. Good point. Anyway, enough of crucifixes and wiping them down so you don't catch contagious diseases. What are we going to talk about today? Well, we're going to talk about deaths on sets. Well, movie sets, aren't we?
Yeah.
After the Alec Baldwin incident, we thought it'd be interesting just to chat about, you know, what's going on. Is this setting a precedent in the movie industry? Will it change things? Is this something that people working in the movie industry should be concerned about? And how common actually is it? I think we'll cover a wide variety of different things, along with the case of Alec Baldwin on the movie set of Rust. So that's to be looked forward to. But before we get into that, we will be looking at what we've learned this week. So, Alex.
Hey.
From Bonnie Scotland, what have you learned this week?
Well, this week I haven't actually learned anything about Scotland, but I have learned a little something about the US Constitution and one of the amendments, you know, so the amendments that they wrote to the Constitution, because things weren't quite working, so they just amended them as they went along.
Makes sense, yeah.
And do either of you know about the 12th Amendment?
Big time.
I believe it came after the 11th Amendment.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that is
bloody,
actually
bloody good number.
A misunderstanding. No, I don't know. It's not about
that. That would be amazing if that were the fact.
But the 12th Amendment, I'm not going to go into like the technical details of it because it's not that interesting. But before the 12th Amendment, basically...
Why are we talking about
this? You're selling it so well, Alex.
But well, it was just like, it was a way that they changed the Electoral College and the way that electors cast their votes.
Okay,
but before this amendment happened, the Electoral College, the person who won the most votes in the Electoral College would be president, but the second, the one with the second most votes would be the vice president. So you had a scenario where you'd have two people competing for the presidency on opposition parties, and they would be president and vice president.
This is what happened with John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, isn't it?
Exactly,
and they were on the opposite sides of the political spectrum, and they didn't have a great time, I believe.
I mean,
so the amendment makes sense.
Yeah. But do you think this brings politics together? Like, you look at other countries, look at the likes of Germany with their multi-party system and various other countries, and when parties have to work together, yes, it can cause deadlock and can cause issues, but it also means that you can't be too disparaging towards your opposition because you know that actually you're going to have to work with them in some capacity. So could this actually be a good thing? Have they screwed this up by making politics too partisan?
In fairness, when I first heard about this, I thought, oh, that's a terrible system. I totally understand why they changed that. But now, with how partisan politics are in the US, something like this, I could imagine actually being weirdly good, or like just forcing the parties to work together because they literally are formed in the same administration.
Yeah.
Imagine Donald Trump as president and Hillary Clinton was his vice president.
Oh, goodness.
And then right now he gets demoted to vice president for Joe Biden's presidency. I think that would be hilarious. And that'd be really
cool. You
see,
I was with you 100% until you said it would, when you named the recent combinations we would have got, Trump and Clinton and then Biden and Trump. I'm just like,
it's
no.
like a sitcom.
No, the worst kind.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, Biden, Trump. Yeah. Although his persona and the way he conducted himself would surely be so different if he knew that was on the cards. Like, you do get running mates who, I'm trying to think of an example now, but who compete against each other on stage and in the debates, and they tear each other apart, and then they're like, good luck in the rest of the thing. And it's like, you know, kind of, it's only business, it's nothing personal kind of attitude.
Well, every Republican who ran against Trump in the primaries.
Yeah.
Right? Ted Cruz in particular, and Chris Christie is the golden example, who criticized Trump and then suddenly was his slave boy. His gimp from throughout his administration. Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, Martin, you mentioned that often coalitions lead to deadlock, but do they really? Compared to America for the last 10 years at least, if not the last 15 years, the deadlock is strong because the Republicans just stonewall everything the Democrats try to do.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in a party system where you're used to compromise as well, maybe there is more willingness to work together because otherwise literally nothing happens. So maybe within the infrastructure of the system, it's kind of built in that there is collaboration and compromise. Mm. So yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, maybe in actual fact, it's a better thing overall. Yeah, I can see why they've changed it, but also the benefits of potentially having it there as well.
I could see with this system before, I think Trump threw a spanner into this, but before Trump, I could see John McCain or Mitt Romney working with Obama.
McCain in particular. Yeah, he was very complimentary, wasn't he, in the speech? When the Republicans were booing at the rally, weren't they, after Trump won? After Obama won, and he was like, "No. Let's show some decorum here." You know, he's a good man and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, it depends who you have. It very much depends on who's in charge. Yeah, but good fact. Yeah. Good, great fact.
Oh, good. Thank you,
Robin.
Fascinating fact.
Do you have anything to top that?
Not really. Nowhere near as juicy. It's a pretty dry, to be honest, my fact, because I was having a great time and looking up decimalization of currency the other day, just for fun. And I was curious because I learned this week that the first country in the world to decimalize their currency which is to divide your currency into subunits in tens. So, for example, in Britain, we used to have pounds, shillings, and pence, very famously, until 1971, when we decimalized to have just pounds and pence, 100 pennies to the pound. But the first country to decimalize was Russia in 1704.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's that late, to be honest. 1704.
Really? Okay, I thought it was earlier than I expected.
It was exactly as I had expected to the year.
To the very year. And then, but the first time that the UK tried to decimalize their currency, as in an attempt was made to get it passed through Parliament, mm-hmm. was 1824.
Oh.
And it failed because people hate change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nearly 150 years before we actually finally did it.
Although the change would...
Little joke there about
about change would have been easier to count. Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Well, I got it. Nice. And then the other fact I learned, and this I did find quite amusing, was I found something from 1960, which is when South Africa decimalized their currency. And there was a report in the British media about how it was going in South Africa and how they did it. And the report mentions the current proposals as of 1960, 10 years before we actually did it in the UK, of how decimalization would work. So, guys, do you remember? You know how our currency works right now. You've got 100 pennies.
Hopefully, I've got a good grasp of it, yeah.
100 pennies become a pound, and that's it. So, it's that simple.
That's it.
So, the proposal in 1960 was that each pound would be subdivided into 10 shillings.
What?
And if I understand it correctly, each shilling would be subdivided into 100 pennies.
No.
Like 1,000 pennies for every pound.
Just keep dividing them and eventually we'll split the atom.
Oh, dear. No.
Well, I'm glad that idea didn't take hold.
Why would you do? What's the benefit of that?
That was awful. Someone was just really keen to keep the shilling, I guess.
Yeah,
That is it, isn't it? I bet there's some campaigns out there right now to bring back the shilling. People are weirdly defending the
bring
shilling.
Bring back the halfpenny and the shilling.
Yeah. Well, my fact this year is quite different to decimalization. And the 12th Amendment, and actually includes a priest and a whole load of balloons. Have you seen the film Up?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Well, Up, but with Catholic priests or a Catholic priest.
Really?
Unfortunately, the story doesn't end so well. So, Father Adelier Antonio de Carli, who's a Brazilian priest. He strapped 1,000 helium balloons to him in an attempt to raise money to build a worship center for truckers. Oh. And to go by the article, so this was in 2008. And so times are tough, you know, we've got the crisis, the banking crisis going on, you know, need funds to help, you know, build infrastructure. Anyway, he strapped all these balloons to himself at this port. And then he lost contact with his ground team, who I imagine were keeping him on the ground. These balloons, it describes as yellow, orange, pink, and white balloons, were found in the water of the port a day later after he'd floated off.
Oh, damn.
Yep. And, and tugboat workers discovered the body off Rio de Janeiro. In July, that belonged to the priest, and so Up went wrong, unfortunately, with this priest, and he unfortunately died from flying off with 1,000 helium balloons strapped to him.
Did he raise any money?
Well, I hope so. You'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Yeah. In a way, it sounds like it worked because he clearly drifted off.
Yeah, exactly.
And then came back down.
I mean, poor bloke. He was only 40. It is sad, but at the same time,
really,
it's like,
only 40.
I mean, think about the way in which the way you could possibly go is just, you know, it's quite a way to go, really, isn't it?
I used to have like a when I was really young, I used to fantasize about that, not like dying in that way, but like fantasize about, you know, having all those like helium balloons and lifting off and flying about. I feel yes. like he thought like he was just looking for a cause to live out his fantasy of doing that.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's not the first thing that comes to mind when you think of truckers.
We need to raise some money for some truckers. I know what I'll do.
Yeah.
I'll strap myself to 1,000 balloons.
It wasn't the first attempt that he had made. He had actually made another attempt in January of the same year, and he completed another flight with 600 balloons attached to him, and he flew for 4 hours over 25 kilometers a distance. And reached heights of 5,300 meters, apparently, which sounds incredibly high up and incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, what is that?
So he had done it once.
Yeah, he had done it before. This one just went wrong.
And he doubled it up. He doubled up on the balloons.
Doubled the number of balloons. But I mean, this is something I'm going to be looking up because it's called cluster ballooning, which is where you just as you can imagine, you attach a cluster of balloons to you.
Yeah.
But I didn't know this was an actual thing. I mean, they're not like party balloons. You know, they're massive balloons.
Yeah,
it's more akin to being strapped to a hot air balloon, I guess, than like kids, you know, summer fate.
I saw David Blaine do this. He did this last year, I think.
Did he go as high as outer space? Is that how?
I don't know how high
burst and he came back
David
down.
Blaine Ascension. I'm not sure what it's called. I'm not sure how high up he went.
Hmm. But this method, Martin, is there any way of steering? Did he have any control at all over where he was going?
I think a little bit like paragliding. You know, you have the attachments. I think there's a bit of that. Like you're holding onto a harness, and I imagine you can steer using it. Otherwise, it'd be incredibly. Well, you just go with the wind, wouldn't you?
Well, actually, that's what I'm worried about,
I imagine that the idea is to then slowly deflate the balloons to kind of come to a landing. I mean, this is very unfortunate, but it does sound like a dangerous hobby. But the idea of the priest doing it to raise money, then just kind of floating off up into the air is kind of tragic, but also quite funny at the same time.
It's exactly what you fear would happen, and then it happened.
Yes,
poor,
exactly.
Poor fella. At least he died trying to help others.
And if you want to see Martin do the same thing, head over to our Patreon page.
Yeah, exactly.
Our Patreon goal.
It is. 100,000,000,000 pounds a month. And I will strap myself to... I mean, actually, how much would you have to be paid to do that? I don't know. It seems well dangerous, actually. You need to know what you're doing, so you have to know when to deflate the balloon. Yeah, it doesn't sound like a good idea, does it? Doesn't sound like a good
I wouldn't
idea.
Trust myself really.
I'd but, do it for I mean, 100 someone, shillings a month.
If someone offered me £1 billion, I'd give it a go, I think.
That's true. It's worth it.
But the Patreon still does exist. And if you do want to head on over there, there's plenty of, probably about 100 episodes now, aren't there, of extra bits and pieces to watch of a little more interesting. And you guys did this week's because I wasn't available. But what did you talk about? Give us a little rundown of what people can expect when they go on the Patreon.
Well, we ranted a bit about Black Friday and Cyber Monday. That episode is already up at the time of recording. And then the next episode after that will be about NASA, space, asteroids, and a dart.
Nice.
Exactly.
And a dart. So we talked about the the mission to blow up an asteroid, right? To take it off course. Is that the idea?
Yeah, it's not quite Bruce Willis Armageddon, you know, drill a hole and detonator. It's literally to move an asteroid off course by 1%. Right. So it's not quite avenging the dinosaurs yet, but it could be a stepping stone into like a proper Earth planetary defense system. It's exciting. It's exciting stuff.
And I imagine that probably will be up by the time this episode goes out, most likely. So do head on over. Patreon does help us to keep the show going. And also we've got some plans in place to create some mini docs, haven't we, when we're able to get back together properly. So, you know, all of your funds helps to fund that as well, which we're excited about.
Once we've cleared the SDI tests, we'll be back together.
I'm quite jealous because you guys got to meet up a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah, all too briefly, though. All too briefly, sadly. Saw each other in London. It was weird. Martin's a lot taller than I remember.
Thank you. And you're tiny. You're actually 3 foot, a lot shorter. But you always sat on a stool. So, and with that, shall we have a look at our favourite comments of the week?
Let's.
Yeah.
So the first comment I want to mention is from Lydia Gibson, who asked. It was actually kind of answered by one of you. But I take minor issue with it. So she asks, why is the podcast not in person anymore? And one of you responded saying, Alex decided to go be Scottish. And that is one of the reasons. But let's not pretend that is the whole reason. Even before that, we lived pretty far apart.
We did, yeah.
And the original plan was to do it in person. I've got the whole backdrop with the brick wall.
The first few episodes of the podcast were in person, and then that pesky pandemic hit.
Yeah.
And we all had to go into lockdown.
It hasn't massively let up, has it, really? So,
no.
Yeah.
Opportunities have been kind of few and far between a little bit.
But I mean, honestly, I don't think us being separate really matters for the podcast too much. If anything, I think we all have our own microphone, so it's like actually helps the
that's true.
The quality of it. But it would be really nice to go back and film some docs with you guys, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Come back down, or you guys come up and we can maybe go back to Epping Forest and find Dick Turpin. Who knows?
road trip. Epping Forest. Then we head back up to yours, back to your house for a bit of Loch Ness.
Grab a quick nap, head over to Loch Ness.
Back to the Winchester and to its water.
I was going to say Stonehenge, but they kind of figured that one out, haven't they? So
this is a mental road trip itinerary so far. So Epping Forest to Scotland and then back
and then
to Stonehenge.
Down to Salisbury Plain.
One I do want to do is, Rendlesham Forest.
The UFO
sighting. And see if we can speak to some of the people who are at the army base.
Definitely.
Yeah, I agree entirely. Definitely love to do that. So the plan is definitely to be back together in person at some point. Just a question of when and logistics and safety.
It is. Mm. But I've got one. Talking of safety in another way, I guess. Mm. I've got one from Micaiah Barron who says, I have friends who have fallen into QAnon conspiracism. It appeals to all the right, aka wrong, triggers in the brain that look for answers to questions and keeps telling you, of course people hate it, they're in on it. And that's a good point, Micaiah, because there's always the out of, well, yeah, of course you don't like it because you're part of it. Yeah, I get that. It becomes very hard to reason with, especially when the kind of help they need is part of the conspiracy. It's not going away, and I hate how many lives are being ruined, wasted, hurt by it, while the original creator just gets to have fun being an asshole, which is probably the truth, right? A lot of the time, people that make up some of these theories or come up with the ideas don't necessarily believe them. They just want to make a compelling theory that others will follow.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yes, a good point, Micaiah. Well said.
Yeah, you're so right about it's just kind of sad. It's not like, oh, these people are political opponents to me anymore. It's now just, these people are wasting their money going to Dallas for weeks and on ends, becoming ostracized from the rest of their family for some of their getting sucked into this cult, essentially.
And just to say, because we've talked a lot about conspiracy theories of all kinds for many years now, we are referring specifically to QAnon, I think, because we recognize, I think, all three of us, that certain individuals who get obsessed with certain conspiracy theories sometimes do uncover really interesting things. And there are, conspiracy theories cover real government plots sometimes, or real terrorist plots sometimes, or whatever. So we're not dismissing conspiracy theories or conspiracy theorists, because sometimes, as much of a tragic obsession it can be in someone's life, they can uncover really important truths. But with the case of QAnon, it's just really, really sad.
And with most theories, there tends to be an element of truth. There's a grain there. No matter how crazy the conspiracy, there's a grain somewhere that's come from a place of fact, and then it just gets untangled like a broken slinky.
Well, if I may read out another comment that just aligns with that, that I kind of found quite amusing. It was a Doom's comment where he says, like, so QAnon says, there are international sex trafficking rings. Me, yes. QAnon, run by the wealthy and elite. Me, yes. Including politicians and world leaders. Me, yes. QAnon, and Trump is the only one who can save us when JFK comes back from the dead to make him president again. You almost had it. You almost had it.
Yeah, that was good. That's a good comment. Yeah. I've got a comment as well that mentions QAnon from Elaine Christina. Hello, Elaine. And she says, QAnon reminds me too much of Charles Manson and his followers. Shiver. And how come Robot Robin hasn't found a connection between 69 and castration for this quiz? You know, it's a good point. And I'd like to say thank you, Elaine, for keeping that alive and for reminding me of my place and what I should really be doing on these podcasts.
Anyway, enough of that. Let's move on to the main topic of this week. And that is that we have seen a rise in film set fatalities, with the latest one, of course, being the tragic death on the film set of Rust, which actually I hadn't heard of. I didn't know it was being filmed until this tragic news came out. And on the set of Rust, there was the accidental shooting using a gun that was supposedly meant to be, you know, not loaded or loaded with, was it loaded with blanks? Or was it not loaded?
It was meant to be not loaded at all. So this is part of the controversy. So I think it was on October the 21st this happened, and it was Alec Baldwin, the well-known actor, who's starring in and producing the film Rust. It's a Western. And in this particular scene, he was rehearsing a shot, in the film, where he drew his gun, his pistol, his revolver, and pointed it at the camera for a kind of frontal shot.
Yeah.
And apparently the director and the cinematographer were standing behind the camera, as they probably would be, going through the rehearsal with Alec Baldwin. And then accidentally, and this is still something we don't really know how it came about, but whilst rehearsing this action of taking the gun out and pointing at the camera, the gun went off, and the gun was supposed to be empty. And there's this phrase that's been going around a lot. People are learning it for the first time, in my case certainly, called cold gun, as opposed to a hot gun. And what that means is when Alec Baldwin was handed the gun by the first assistant director yelled cold gun, which means in film set terms, there's literally nothing in the gun. There is nothing in it. If it's a hot gun, it has a blank in it or a live round. So a cold gun technically is supposed to be completely empty. This one was not. What I don't know yet, and I'm not sure if they've confirmed this, authorities, I think so far it wasn't just that there was a blank in the chamber of the revolver, but there was an actual live round. There was a bullet with gunpowder in a cartridge in the gun. And I think we'll have confirmation of this eventually it will come to trial, presumably, because the district attorney is investigating.
Yeah.
But that's the real tragedy here. And this is where I think a lot of the discussion is revolving around. It's kind of saying, who's responsible for this accident, and why on earth was there a live round on a movie set anyway? And what possible... People are asking, I'm saying, I'd like to know what you guys think. In what world is it necessary for a film, which is make-believe, to have a live round in a gun?
And of course, the upshot of this was that Helena Hutchins, the cinematographer, she was the one who was killed, sadly. So it's horrendous, but it's not the only one, is it? There have been many deaths and fatalities on movie sets over the last 20 years. In fact, it's thought that there have been 47 fatalities since 1990 as a result of accidents on sets, which is a huge amount of fatalities. And so I think what we want to look at today is just to look at, are these increasing? Is there an issue with... you know, with accidents on set? Is it just some? Is it just because the movie industry is expanding? And what can be done for us to actually improve this the safety record going forward? Because, of course, there are so many like really really famous examples of people dying on set. You look at Brandon Lee, who died on the set of The Crow in 1993, which is a remarkably similar accident, wasn't it? It was a live bullet was used in the scene, and then the prop had been switched. And the bullet got lodged in the barrel, I believe, wasn't it? It was lodged in the barrel. They thought they had emptied it, and then it was used, and he was shot and killed.
I mean, that's the kind of distinction, I guess, between that and the...
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Rust incident. A live, like an actual regular live ammunition bullet shouldn't ever be on a film set. It's with the live ammo that they bring on to the set, or the actual real ammo, they remove the primer from it, which is like, and the gunpowder, so it can't go off. I think that's so you get that effect of it like flying out the gun. Is that right? Or the shell casing?
So what in the case of what happened with The Crow is that there were two bullets involved. So again, it was a revolver, and I think there's a pattern here, isn't there? It was a revolver that one character shoots Brandon Lee's character with in the film, and they'd rehearsed it because I think for a close-up of the gun, because it's a revolver, the bullets are exposed in the chambers. And so to look like real bullets, they had what they call dummy bullets in. But those dummy bullets are an empty cartridge with a bullet stuck in the end. But for some reason, I can't remember what the excuse was. If there probably wasn't an excuse, to be honest, those dummy bullets were primed. They shouldn't have been primed, as Alex says. They should have had no primer, no gunpowder, and a bullet in the end. But for some reason, they were primed.
I think they made their own ones for some reason. I can't remember why.
Yeah, and the armorer wasn't on set for when the accident actually occurred. They'd gone home early, but they kept shooting. And the prop master was not the armorer, and therefore wasn't properly trained in it, I suppose, or experienced. And that's probably how this came about. So what happened was, Alex says, they made their own. So it was a primed cartridge with a bullet in the end. They did the scene. They pull the trigger. It hits the primer. The primer still contains power because it's a tiny little explosive. It was just enough to lodge the bullet from the other end of the cartridge into the barrel of the gun. So they take out the dummy bullets, as they're supposed to, put in the blank firing bullets, which are cartridges with gunpowder in and no bullet. But then once you've put a blank in with gunpowder in and a primer, and there's a bullet lodged in the barrel of the gun, you've got a live round. And that's exactly what happened with Brandon Lee. So it was a combination of two separate things. A lot of mismanagement, irresponsibility, led to a tragic death, an accident on the film set. And in response, I think there was a change to the rules about the hours in which people were allowed to work, because a big part of the blame fell on the fact that they were shooting for 13, 14-hour days to keep the costs down.
Right.
And people were just tired and making mistakes.
Yeah, and that's so tragic. I love that film, The Crow. It's such a good film.
Yeah.
I've never seen The Crow. No.
What?
It's pretty good.
No,
it's pretty
good. You need to watch it.
Yeah.
And I believe there was a death on one of the sequels as well. Stairway to Heaven from 1998, The Crow, Stairway to Heaven. There was a stuntman was killed when an on-set explosion went wrong and it threw debris into his head.
My God.
I mean, stunt accident, that's the thing. They have, you know, they have stunt doubles and stunt people for a reason, right? They're doing incredibly dangerous things, and you can't insure most actors to do it unless you're Tom Cruise. whereas you look at a lot of these, and there's been deaths on Deadpool 2. There was someone died on the set of that, as well as Top Gun, quite famously. And also on the set of the Jumper as well. So there've been plenty of recent examples of quite high budget films where people have died.
I mean, a stuntman, Vin Diesel's stunt double, died on the set of Triple X, during a paragliding stunt. I think that he was on a paraglider behind the boat, like is one of the final sequences of the film, and he has to drop down below a bridge, and he didn't do it in time, and just smashed into the bridge. Like, surely there's a way of doing that that doesn't actually involve risk.
I mean, he's not the only one, Vin Diesel's stunt double. I know that on one of the latest Fast and Furious films, I think it might be number 8 or 9, there was someone who had a really bad accident there too and was in a coma for a while.
It was nine. I think Vin Diesel's stunt double again. Yeah. He fell. He was doing a stunt where he jumps in Edinburgh and he jumps from a balcony, I think. And then, his stunt double went into a coma after falling.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah, just don't take the role.
Never work with Vin Diesel's double.
But the thing is, it's not just stuntmen. And they are, as Martin said, they're insured stunt people. And they accept this risk. It's tragic that they do this, but it's what they live for. And they know the risks when they do it. It's sad that it happens. And it ideally shouldn't happen. But you kind of like, okay, if a stuntman dies, it's tragic, but it's... you accept it. It's one of the reasons I think we don't hear about it very often and why this Rust news was so shocking, because suddenly a cinematographer who shouldn't be in any danger and the lead actor is the one who does it, who kills them. But, just to kind of be the devil's advocate, accidents can happen in the simplest ways. Like our good friend Orson Welles broke his ankle when making Citizen Kane because he just slipped on the stairs.
Easy to do.
Yeah, he fell down the stairs, broke his ankle. He could have broken his neck, but he broke his ankle instead. On the same film, there was a scene where he trashes a room and he accidentally broke a piece of glass and cut his hand. In the same way that Leonardo DiCaprio cut his hand during that famous scene in Django Unchained, which they kept in the final movie. And camera people have died on other films as well. And I mean, they've been controversial accidents where crew members have been behind the camera. Like there's one film where a train stunt and the train gets derailed and the camera people ahead of the train filming it being derailed, the train just went a bit too far into the camera and killed the person behind the camera. And it's tragic. It shouldn't happen, but these things can happen even if you think everything is controlled. Audrey Hepburn, this is a death in a way. She was filming a Western called The Unforgiven with Gregory Peck in 1959, I think. The film came out in 1960. And it's a Western, so they're riding horses. Whilst training for rehearsing for a scene, she fell off her horse. She was pregnant at the time, had a miscarriage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she hurt her back. And she had to complete the rest of the film, and she did. But she lost that child because she fell off a horse. And, at what point do you say, well, we'll never make a Western again because we can't have people falling off horses? Rocky IV, Sylvester Stallone nearly died from a heart attack when Dolph Lundgren punched him in the chest. They were filming it, he did it, but he punched him so hard, Stallone had a heart attack, taken to hospital, nearly died. And you're just like... we'll never make a boxing movie again because it's too dangerous.
That's the thing. There's so many people working on film sets as well. The movie industry is just so huge that you expect that occasionally these things will happen. Just like occasionally it's really sad, but people in the audience at music, bad example with the latest music show, but say a football match, the likelihood is that at some stage there'll be someone in the audience who has a cardiac arrest and unfortunately passes away, just because there's 10, 20, 30, 40, 50,000 people all in that area at the same time. Statistically, it's going to happen. And it's just whether these things are majorly avoidable or not, isn't it? I mean, if you're culpable and it's very much avoidable, then it's a different story to if someone's just unfortunately died in a risk that they knew about if they were a stunt actor or whatever. But of course, I'm looking at a list here of the most dangerous jobs, and you look at something, top of the list is logging workers. And in terms of fatal injuries per per 100,000 full-time workers, it's over 97.6.
Wow.
Which is almost 1 in 1,000 loggers can die during work. Which is a massive amount.
That is mad. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I wouldn't. Yeah, you wouldn't want to take that risk. Even like 1 in 1,000. That's
yeah. I mean, something similar happened. I might. Funny, you mentioned it. My dad, when he was young, worked in a timber yard. So he wasn't a logger, but he was in the timber yard where the logs were turned into planks of wood. And one day he was wearing the safety gear that they're supposed to wear, goggles and things, and a large splinter off one of the logs as it was being cut just flew out, went underneath his goggles into his eye.
Oh my God. Wow.
He got taken to hospital, and they actually had to gently tease his eyeball out of its socket in order to extract the splinter and get all the other remaining splinter bits to make sure there was no splinter like behind his eyeball. So he was saying how it was a weird memory because he remembers having like a one eye could see one thing and one eye was seeing something completely different.
Oh, that's
and his brain was struggling to process it. But you know, the doctor said at the time, like he said, you were lucky. You know, if you hadn't been wearing those goggles, it probably would have gone straight through to your brain. The goggles helped slow it down. So that's just an incident story from my dad's youth. But you're right, Martin. Some jobs are dangerous and we accept the risk with stuntmen, but there clearly are examples on particularly film sets, like with Rust and Alec Baldwin and the cinematographer, Mrs. Hutchins, where the risks, they just shouldn't happen, right?
Mm.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems like some of the risk is, also whenever these incidents happen, it's down to low budget and people overworking. That was what happened with Brandon Lee on the set of The Crow. And yeah, there's a difference, I think, between like assumed risk and being behind the camera. Getting shot should never be like, you know, that wasn't an assumed risk at that time. That was, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not like, not like it's a circus act with a strapped to the board with throwing knives. You know, it's a
exactly.
You're behind the camera, aren't you? You don't expect that at all. You're just on a set. You could have just easily been on a, I don't know, a costume drama or a Marvel film, right? It's just that's what makes it truly tragic. But does the film industry have to make changes as a result of this? Of course, I imagine that there's going to be stricter laws around having ammunition on set. But I mean, what's the way to actually eradicate this? Full stop. Because the majority of movie set deaths are stunt people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the ones this year, there was on the set of Love You Ratchu, which I don't know that particular film.
No, me neither.
It looks like it's a potentially an Indian film. Okay. A stuntman didn't die, you know, performing a stunt, but he stepped on an electric wire and died from that. And it's like unfortunately, it's just a tragedy. And I imagine that there'll be, you know, hopefully be an investigation into why the wire was exposed, but it's just so unlucky.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can't really cater for that, can you, by making changes apart from individual, you know, health and safety in general.
A crew member died on the Mr. Rogers film with Tom Hanks.
Really?
Yeah. Because they were filming a scene in an apartment on a balcony, and the crew member was on the balcony behind the camera, had a heart attack, and stumbled back, fell off the balcony.
Oh, no.
And died.
Oh, dear.
You know, and they may have survived the heart attack if they had not fallen off the balcony. But, you know, how do you control that kind of thing?
You can't cater for that, yeah.
You know, it's just stuff like that can happen. I mean, I think, let's look at what they currently do, for example, with gun safety in particular on films. So, and I think this is one of the reasons Rust is such a dangerous situation and why the revolver in particular is a dangerous weapon. So we've seen it in many action films for the past couple of decades. They use sound effects and digital effects to create the effect of a gun firing, particularly in films set in the modern day where everyone's using automatic weapons. You can't see what's in the magazine, so they don't need to have bullets in there. Only on very rare occasions do you need a close-up of what looks like a real bullet. But if that's the case, you use a dummy round because you just have what we describe an empty cartridge with a bullet in the end. And that bullet could be fake, right? It could be rubber and painted to look like metal. So it's far less dangerous. So that's what they do on action movies set in the modern day. They either have only blanks on set or they have digital effects. When it comes to historical films where you have revolvers, that's when it gets tricky, because you have to be able to see the bullets in the chambers of the gun. So then you have to have things that look like real bullets. Apparently, it's preferred to have real bullets in empty cartridges rather than painted ones, because for some reason they don't reflect the light properly. But I don't know if that's necessary. I don't think that's really an issue. So
here are we talking about literally when in a movie scene when they're loading it? Because of course, in a revolver, once you've put the bullet in and you've gone,
yeah,
you don't then see the bullet, do you? Like, it's in the revolver.
Well, I can imagine for a shot like the one that they were rehearsing in Rust, where the gun went off, if he's pointing the gun directly at the camera, then the gun's going to be in focus, and you're going to be able to see into the chambers of the revolver.
I guess so, maybe.
I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't see why
surely
it has...
We
could just be...
Unless you're a weapons expert.
Rubber bullets. Yeah. Or it could even be... because I know these things exist. My family have a few. Prop guns, which are just rubber molds. They're a single piece of rubber painted to look like a metal gun with all its working parts, but actually it has no working parts. And they don't look good enough for a close-up, but for most shots, especially in the background, they look perfectly fine on camera.
Yeah.
Until you have a close-up, and then you need to have something that looks real, and usually is real. Like with medieval films or Lord of the Rings, where for all the close-ups of Aragorn swinging his sword, he's got a real steel blade, blunted, but it's real. And then for all the long, wide shots, he's got a rubber one, because it doesn't matter when you're far away what it looks like. And obviously rubber is a lot safer. Although even then, those rubber swords are pretty hefty. They can hurt. So those are the things that they're currently doing. And then, of course, they've got the safety procedures. So in the case of Rust, you had an armorer who looks after the guns and is the person who has the key to the box where all the guns are kept and is in charge of all the ammunition, all the fake ammunition as well as real ammunition, and is the control of all the guns. They check the weapon to make sure it is safe before they hand it to the first assistant director, who checks it safe and then hands it to the actor, in this case Alec Baldwin, who has to assume it's safe because he knows that two other people at least, including the person who's got the keys to the box where all the guns are kept, he knows that they've checked it and said that it's safe. And this is where the controversy is, because before the gun, the day of the shooting, October the 21st, apparently there had been, I think, two previous accidental discharges of a gun on the set of Rust in the weeks beforehand. So something was wrong with the guns, clearly.
Yeah, how does that happen?
It'll be interesting to see what the court case or the investigation.
I'm intrigued, because I mean, if it comes back that Alec Baldwin knew, as a producer, you'd probably know that too, wouldn't you? Or just being around people on the set, you'd be like, okay, let's be extra vigilant, let's be extra careful.
Yeah,
make sure we do it by the book. Let's not point it at people.
Yeah,
which is something you shouldn't. Yeah, regardless, it's not a great thing to be doing anyway, is it? But anyway.
Well, exactly. And then there's also the first assistant director had been fired from a previous film in 2019 for exactly the same issue, where he had handed a gun that was supposed to be unloaded.
Cold gun.
He'd said it was cold, handed it to the actors. Turned out it was a hot gun with blanks in, I assume, rather than a live round.
Yeah.
Luckily, no one had died on that film, but he got fired for not observing the proper safety procedures. And this is the thing, though, because as a producer, this is where Alec Baldwin is possibly liable, because although there are many producers on the film, he is still probably legally responsible, along with the other producers, for all the safety procedures and the conditions on set. And clearly they chose they hired a first assistant director who had been fired from his last film for bad safety record. They hired a 24-year-old, I think, armorer who hadn't worked as the head armorer on the film before, I don't think, and who clearly didn't have control over the guns because of the accidents that happened beforehand. And then there's all these other complaints the crew members have had, including apparently earlier that same day, some of the crew had walked off set and said, we're not doing this anymore because of the working conditions and how tired they were and how badly managed the whole thing was.
Right.
So, yeah. And then interestingly, the cinematographer Dario Swalski, who worked on The Crow when Brandon Lee was shot, he also has worked on most of Ridley Scott's films and the Pirates of the Caribbean films, the first three Pirates films.
Okay.
So he's worked on big budget movies. First four, actually, he worked on the first four. Big budget movies with lots of guns, including historical guns, lots of weapons, lots of stunts. And he said in an interview in response to the shooting, he said, you know, because obviously he was there when Brandon Lee was shot with, on an on-set accident. And he said, ever since that, The Crow, he's never had any kind of problem with guns on set. And he cannot imagine how it happened on the set of Rust if standard safety procedures were followed. Because he said, on these big productions, and he said, you know, the difference was that The Crow was a low budget, tightly made movie. Everyone was scrambling to get it done. And lots of people were, it was their first movie, they were inexperienced. And he says, ever since then, he's worked with experienced people on big budget movies where there's really tight safety procedures and everything's fine. And he said, he's never had an accident since. Yeah. And he just doesn't understand how it happened on the set of Rust.
Well, he's answered it himself, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Procedures were not followed. And going back to the point about Alec Baldwin, like, the that is the horrible irony, is that he probably won't be charged with it as the shooter, as it were, the person who discharged the weapon, but could be charged as a producer for not following the safety procedures.
Yeah.
Which is mind-boggling, isn't it? It's a weird one.
He's definitely innocent of having actually pulled the trigger and killed the cinematographer, but he's criminally liable as a producer. That's also sad because almost certainly, as the lead actor, he probably is a producer in the sense that he helped develop the script and get the cast together. And then once they're shooting, his responsibility probably almost certainly ends, because when actors produce a movie, they don't really do anything on set except act. That's what the other producers do. They handle all the logistics and stuff like that. When you're actors, when they produce, tend to be creative producers, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You find the script writer, find the director, find the other actors. And of course, we haven't discussed the irony of the story of the film either. The premise of the film is Alec Baldwin is an aging gunfighter who comes in to help a child or a young man who has been wrongly accused, or has been accused of manslaughter, accidentally shooting and killing another person.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, all the irony is thick.
I feel like
it is.
If you're, yeah, I feel like maybe they just need to supplement the rules. I feel like if this kind of incident can still happen today, the same incident that occurred with Brandon Lee in the 90s, like they need to at least supplement the rules to make sure that this particular scenario can't happen. Like maybe, you know, live ammo or live guns can't be used on low budget films or something like that. Or
you're right.
Or I don't know, but I feel like there should be no the problem seems to be when they're flouting the rules because of budget concerns, or they need to get something filmed, so they just they take some shortcuts with this kind of thing. And I feel like there needs to be something in the rules that means the armorer will not give them guns unless like proper procedures are being taken, or if the armorer is separate to
I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
I don't know.
I think that makes perfect sense, but perhaps it makes too much sense, because the issue possibly, it would be interesting to see how this investigation turns out. The issue here is that for some unknown reason, there were live rounds on the set of the film. It shouldn't happen, according to other industry people, including other armourers who say, why were there live rounds on this set? It just shouldn't happen. Blanks, yes. Maybe dummy bullets, but not live rounds. That's weird. No. But the person whose job it is to manage all that is the armourer. So if there were live rounds on the set, it's possible that the armourer of the film Rust is the one who brought them on to set.
Yeah.
In which case,
most likely.
How do you control that if the person you've hired to be in charge of safety is the person who's flouting the rules and inviting danger to the set? I mean, this may not turn out to be the case. I don't know what the DA, the district attorney's investigation will prove, but this seems to be the way it's going.
Yeah. I guess how this do is you speculation.
Stop? Who watches the watches?
How do you get a job as an armorer on a film set? Do you say he was 24 as well?
She's 24.
I imagine that you do. That's the thing. You must have to do your certifications and get your qualifications for it to be safety approved.
Yeah, I think she has. I think like her dad maybe, or she worked with an armorer Like she'd been an assistant armorer, and then she became. Now she's starting out as the head armorer on film.
Yeah, I mean, without wanting to speculate, you can imagine that the bullets were potentially with the gun in the box anyway, from when it was at home, or perhaps, you know, there was talk of maybe going and firing actual bullets at targets offset or something like that, you know, and then they got mixed up and in the box and then given to the producer. But totally tragic. I mean, when you look at the incidents like this, with an accidental death that aren't, you know, a stuntman being killed or a vehicle crash, they're pretty rare. There's only been a handful over the past, you know, 20, 30 years. So, I mean, the thing is that there has to be changes made to in this specific example. But it's not like an endemic thing across the movie industry of like weapon safety issues, I don't think.
Given the number of action movies that are made every year, it's amazing more people aren't dying.
And Robin, quite frankly, your thoughts about other armourers saying how the hell could this have happened? That's good, you know. Yeah. Like if they were like, if they came back and said, oh yeah, well actually, yeah, it's like I can imagine this happening. But if they were like totally perplexed and confused, that's a good sign for the safety industry. It is, because it shows that it's not commonplace across the industry, which is a good thing. And then the question is, will there be these anomalies that you cannot control every once every 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's one of those things. You can tighten, as you say, you can tighten the security and the safety procedures as much as you like. But if individuals make stupid errors and, you know, take certain reckless decisions into their own hands, then unfortunately, this can be the outcome, can't it? Regardless of what you try and do.
I feel like,
yeah, I think you're right.
I feel like as soon as you have a gun on set that has the capacity to fire a live round, then yeah, you're going to get anomalies every 15, 20 years, like you say. I feel like unless you just say no, there's no way. Yeah, you like have only rubber guns or something like that. I think that's the only way to be perfect, like 100% safe. Because yeah, when you're relying on human error, that's going
to
happen.
You have to make a piano noise with your mouth when you fire.
Pew, 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 pew.
This is a Western, sir. Pew, pew. Yeah.
I mean, I think you're both right. They could, I guess the only way I can imagine they might tighten the rules is to say, unless you can demonstrably prove that you need a real gun on set for a particular reason, then everything should be just rubber and not real. You know, like say, if it's just set dressing, then why is it a real gun? Shouldn't be real.
And if you need a close up of the barrel and of the bullet, then sure, that's another shot. Then you do that shot with the safety procedure in place, then you cut away from it. It's never used in an action sequence where you're going to have to fire the gun.
Yeah.
It's used as a close-up of the barrel to, you know, display that it's real.
Also, tripods exist. You don't need to stand behind the camera. You know, just make sure the guns aren't aiming at anyone at any point in time ever, I guess.
I mean, that's the thing. I imagine everybody in Hollywood is going to be, for the next few years at least, is going to be so much more careful now.
You'd
and
hope
I wouldn't
so.
Be surprised if we see a reduction in the number of historical films involving guns that are made. And I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I mean, I know Alec Baldwin himself might retire, but I wouldn't be surprised if he continues acting, that if he never makes a film where guns are involved again.
Quite
I wouldn't blame him if that were the case.
I mean, that's I was thinking about that when this story broke. Like, how do you react as an actor to that? Do you just never act again? Like, it's difficult to imagine, like, to put yourself in their shoes, but I can't imagine what I would do if I was Alec Baldwin. But it would be difficult to get myself onto a film set again after this.
And there's two ways. There's jumping directly back, straight back into it, because you have to keep yourself going. Or, yeah, as you say, yeah, you just take a long time out or just don't do it again.
Mm.
Yeah, I'll be tempted to do a whole load of animated voiceover work for a while.
Yeah, well, he's got the Boss Baby films, he could always stick to those.
Focus on the Boss Baby. No guns involved there. It's sad.
Yeah, he is being sued already by at least two of the crew members, yeah, as a producer, for his involvement, his liability, for I think negligence as well. And one of them suing him for like lost revenue, I think, because of the trauma that she's going to have to.
Is that Mammy Mitchell? That's one of the screen scriptwriters.
Could be, yes. The one who called 911. The one who actually made the call, yeah.
That was this week, wasn't it?
That's right, just the other day. She's suing him for lost revenue because she's going to have to take a few years out because she can't face being on the film set again, which is understandable. So yeah, his troubles are not over.
His troubles are yesterday. Well, his troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Unlucky Alec. Yeah, it's shitty, isn't it? All round, it's horrendous, and like that will of course stay with him for the rest of his life and just be awful. And then of course on top of that, he will feel horrendous, and then he's got a civil lawsuit. So although he fired the trigger and he'd be civilly responsible at the same time, like he wouldn't wish that upon him just because it's life ruining, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah, and then just. I also feel, obviously, for Helena Hutchins' child and husband. Yeah, you know, they just can't. What do you do when, you know, it's just not, you just don't expect that to happen.
Mm.
Even though you know they're working on a film set with guns, you just don't expect to get the call that, by the way, Alec Baldwin shot and killed your wife today. Sorry. I feel for them. I really do. So,
yeah,
I have
awful.
One last question for both of you from me, which is.
Go on then.
The film itself, the film Rust, do you want them to finish it?
I don't really mind. I don't know about the kind of moral standpoint of whether you finish a film if someone's died on it, but it seems disrespectful or whatever, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe it's respectful to go and finish the movie. I imagine that Alec Baldwin won't be taking too much part in the remainder of the filming, will he? I mean, do I want to see it? I don't really care. Like, it's a fairly mid-budget Western film. Take it or leave it. I like Westerns, but I'm not particularly fussed on going and watching it. I certainly don't have the intrigue factor of being like, oh, this is the part where the person died on set. You know, there's none of that. Because I know some people have a morbid curiosity, don't they? Watching things of like, and piecing together when stuff happened. But that's my non-committal answer.
My answer's probably very similar, I'd say, yeah. Before this, I probably wouldn't have seen it in the cinema, and that hasn't changed my opinion after this. Just based on what we know about the film so far, like it's not one that I would normally go and see in the cinema unless the trailer looked amazing or something like that, but.
If it looks better than Cowboys versus Aliens, then I'm in.
Oh, sold. Yeah, 5 tickets, please.
Just me and 4 seats around me
for all my popcorn.
What about you, Robin? Are you will you be seeing this film?
I would probably watch it if they take the trouble to finish it. I don't expect them to. Like you say, I expect Alec Baldwin at the very least is probably not going to go near this thing again. I'd be very surprised if he tries to finish it. But if they do finish it, I would be curious to see it because I would assume they finish it because they felt it was worthy of the sacrifice. That makes sense.
Yeah.
If everyone involved thinks this film wasn't good enough to justify the loss of life, let's not finish it, then, you know.
Yeah.
But if they bother to finish it, I would assume, therefore, that they feel it's worth it. And therefore, I would probably check it out.
There we go. Yes, but what do you think? I mean, what can be done? Let's ask you guys at home. What do you think? Do you think massive sweeping changes have to be made to the movie industry to make things safer? Or are these kind of just these freak accidents that will tend to happen once in a while and there's not really much we can do about it? Is it an occupational hazard?
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Let us know in the comments below. And shall we move on to this week's quiz?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to the quiz. 10 questions as usual, and if we're tied, we move on to a bonus question. Gentlemen, do you have your buzzers at the ready?
Yes. I do.
Good. Well, who wants to show their buzzer first? Robin, go on.
Ooh, okay.
Curry sauce all over your anus.
Lovely.
That beautiful.
Beautiful. Tom Baker.
Thank you. Well done, Tom. And Alex.
I've gone for a classic, another drunk individual. Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest. What?
Wonderful. What?
That's brilliant.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Okay, I've gone for a general knowledge quiz. So, you know, I think there's probably an equal opportunity of winning this quiz for both of you, which is always a bonus when it comes to
win.
The best of quiz. Question number one. This one is a closest wins to start us off, which is quite nice. Can be quite nice. Yeah. Get us eased in.
It can be quite nice, yeah.
Someone will get a point, let's just say that. How many miles of coastline does the UK have?
Oh.
Hmm.
That's a good one.
Oh, I don't want to guess that.
Yeah.
So the entire circumference of it. Is that the right word?
That is the right word, yeah.
Oh, God.
That's a tricky one.
Oh, God.
Sauce all over your anus.
It could be a vast world range, couldn't it?
It could. This one. I'm going to take the plunge.
Okay.
See, now I'm doubting myself because suddenly I'm like, actually, how long is the UK? I'm going to go with 3,000 miles of coastline.
Okay.
It's probably way off.
No, I mean, I'll be honest, I was thinking somewhere between 1,000 and 10,000, so I'm glad we're in that range. But I'm actually going to go a bit higher.
Gentlemen, this...
I'm not going to be a total scumbag, but I'll go 4,000 miles.
Ooh.
The answer is 7,723 miles. So, Alex, you get 1 point.
No.
Thank you.
1-0 to Alex.
Go, go, go.
Question number two. This isn't the question, but this is related to the question. Are you two avid coffee drinkers? You drink coffee, don't you, Alex?
I like coffee. Yeah.
You're not so much, Robin. Do you drink coffee?
No, not really. Yeah.
No, yeah, I thought that was right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is related to coffee, this question. So question number two. Which country produces the most coffee in the world?
This is Democracy Manifest.
I think Alex is there first, yeah.
I don't know if it's this one, but I've just heard they produce a lot of coffee. Is it Colombia?
It's not Colombia, but yes, they do produce a lot of fine, sweet coffee.
That was going to be my guess. I bet it's a trick. It's a trick question.
It probably is, isn't it?
Pretty sure it must be. Oh, actually. Brazil?
It is Brazil.
What? Oh, nice.
Brazil produces the most coffee in the world. Well done. 1-1. But yeah, Brazil, I mean, I don't know about anywhere else, but in the UK, if you try and pick up coffees, not necessarily. Yeah, Colombia's often there.
Like most of them are Colombian coffee.
Colombian
or Guatemalan or Ethiopian quite often. That's quite common as well.
Mm.
But yeah.
I don't really, I'll be honest, I don't know my blends though. I just drink a lot of it. Anything would do. You know, I'm not fussy.
Wood chippings, just grind it up. Give it to me.
It's a caffeinated
I've been drinking. I've been watching coffee videos on YouTube, which is weird because I don't specialize in coffee or drink much coffee.
Yeah.
There's this guy, he's going on about all the different techniques and stuff. And it's I don't know if it is interesting, but I'm just fascinated. I'm just kind of hooked on it, you know?
Mm.
And now I'm like, I've got to.
You're hooked on coffee knowledge.
I've got to grind my own coffee now because it just tastes nicer. Yeah. So I'm thinking I might get a Christmas coming. I might get a coffee grinder.
The thing is when
that
I,
sounds like a not like a waste of money.
I drink coffee when I first wake up, and anything that I can't focus on anything when I first wake up before I've had a coffee. So grinding my own coffee beans is not something I want to do before I've had a coffee. If that, you know what I mean.
the surf, yeah. Although you want that first one to be like a good one, right? And if you grind, it seems like if you grind them yourself, you're gonna get a better cup of coffee.
It seems to make sense, yeah.
Yeah,
like loose leaf tea, you know, it's better than just a tea.
The depth of flavor. Yeah. I'm thinking I'm thinking of potentially getting like a hand grinder
because it's a hand grenade.
Yeah, boom, with coffee beans everywhere. Just because I'm thinking that kind of it might feel quite nice to grind your own coffee. Quite a nice kind of therapeutic process. Mm-hmm. And also you don't have to spend as much to get a better grind of coffee because you're not paying for all the motor and all the electric basket hopper and stuff for the coffee beans. Mm. So you're literally just paying for the good burrs, you know, the grinding burrs.
Is that what they rotate?
Yeah, the burr grinder.
So are you going to get what's your coffee device of choice? Are you just cafetiering it?
I don't know.
Or are you going to get an AeroPress?
This is it. Yeah, probably cafetiere.
I
used to have one, didn't you? Yeah. Yeah.
And then I think I lost it or I forgot to take it with me.
Someone stole it.
Probably. Yeah. I don't know what the advantage is, but it has a suction thing. It just kind of...
it's like the plunger thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's different to a cafetiere.
French press it looks like that, but it doesn't have like the grill in it. It's easier to clean as well, right?
It's easier to clean. It like compresses down at the bottom. It gets... And it's quite quick to brew as well.
It's pretty handy.
Why
is this not more common? This sounds great.
I've been looking at some where we're way off track here. I've been looking at some of the grinders where you can grind it, and the grinder then attaches to an AeroPress, and then you can then use the AeroPress.
Whoa.
So it just like streamlines the whole process.
What a time to be alive. Yeah.
Anyway. might have to cut this.
I think Martin's just fishing for like hint Christmas gift presents. Hints, yeah.
Exactly.
So if anyone, if either of you want, I really want a coffee manual grinder. Just that.
Well, everyone has one going. Just let me know. Owns a coffee grinding business. Fantastic. Question number three. One all. Three men's tennis players currently each have 20 Grand Slam titles. These are Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, and which other men's tennis player?
Damn it.
This is democracy manifest.
Alex.
It's got to be the one, the only. Is it Andy Murray?
Andy Murray does not have 20 Grand Slams, no.
I don't know. Tennis?
No, he doesn't.
He's the only other tennis player I know.
You said the two people I know, Martin.
He has three. Andy Murray has three Grand Slams.
Oh, right. Okay.
Not 20.
What other famous tennis players are there?
I know one
give a
other.
Have a guess, Robin, and then I'll give a
have
clue.
A guess. Have a guess.
Who did you say, Martin? Federer...
And Djokovic.
Federer and Djokovic.
The two people I know. Yeah. Venus Williams, but that's not a man. So let's go with... Who's the curly-haired... it's on the line!
John McEnroe.
Is it him?
It's not John McEnroe. Oh. I'll give you a clue.
Okay.
They're a current player.
That doesn't help.
They're still playing now. You would have heard of the name, believe me.
Men's tennis players. That 100% aren't Andy Murray.
100% you're
Roger Federer.
Or if I put in this person's name instead of Djokovic, you'd probably have forgotten which one Djokovic. Like he's so famous.
Roger Federer. Oh my god! I feel like I'm blanking. Can we have the initials?
Yeah.
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 RN. Alex.
Rafael Nadal?
It is Rafael Nadal.
Yeah, I couldn't remember the first name.
I would have given it for the surname, don't worry. He's got 13 French Open titles. 13! At the one
That's
tournament.
Unlucky.
It's amazing. Incredibly nice. Unlucky. Yeah.
So. Was anyone else playing in those tournaments?
default winner. Yeah. Quite
not to belittle his accomplishment, I just don't know anything about tennis.
It looks so tiring. Like a lot of sports look tiring, but I watch tennis and I'm
it
like,
tiring.
No way.
You know, sports that look tiring, like rowing, that looks well tiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rowing
yeah.
is tiring. I've
that
done,
is.
I've been,
but at least it's over quickly.
Machines. Yeah. Well, often it's not, though. It goes on for like 25, 30 minutes.
Oh, that's true.
I mean,
long ones.
It's all the tennis
is quite tiring.
You're sprinting to one area and then just stopping and turning around, and it's always really hot.
And then
hot
you have to whack it, and
it's always really hot weather.
It always is. It's always sweltering.
It does tend to be, actually, if you think about when the Grand Slams are. The Australian Opens in January. But that's Australian.
Wow, that's the height of their summer, isn't
it? Yeah. And then the French Open's probably actually the coolest because it's in June. And then July is Wimbledon, where it's going to be notoriously dodgy weather. And then the US Open's in August, September.
Which is like super hot, yeah.
Yeah.
I love this. This is going to be the whole quiz. Every question is going to happen. We need to bring in the interesting conversation after it. But.
Question number four. Which country is set to become a republic this week by removing the Queen as head of state?
Oh.
Democracy manifest.
Alex.
It was, oh my gosh. Is it Barbados?
It was Barbados.
Yes.
Well done. Very good.
Well
very good.
Done.
There we go. Yes. Removing the Queen.
I did see that on the news. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good on them.
It's about time. It's about time.
Yeah. Yeah. 3-1. Question number five. What is the most popular colour in the world?
Source all over your anus.
Robin, what's the most popular colour in the world?
I don't know, but I needed to buzz in before Alex got another question. Most popular colour in the world. I'm going to go with red.
It is not red.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, wow. I thought it was red.
Oh.
Oh, man. You'd think it would be blue, but I have reason to suspect it's not blue. I'm going to go...
Gentlemen, this is democracy.
I'm going to go green.
It is not green.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Is it blue?
It is blue.
What? Yes.
Thank you, Alex.
I'll explain my rationale. I didn't read the article, so maybe that was it. But I'm guessing this is where it came from. I saw an article listed the other day or today earlier on where it said the headline was "Why is blue so rare?" So I was just like, "Well, maybe it's not."
I just
blue then.
Does it mean rare in nature, does it mean?
I guess so. But you'd think the ocean and sky.
Mm. Oh, that's true, yeah.
Good point. Yeah, there is that. Yeah. No, I mean, the majority of the quiz, other than maybe the Barbados question, comes from just things I think of. It's never to do with articles, so it's just things I think of in my head and then think of a question or look around me. So that's why they're quite random, nice. Unfortunately.
No, it's good.
That's
it keeps
a good
us
way
on our toes.
It's
great general knowledge, Martin. It always is.
But it hasn't come from any article, so yeah. So if you find some counterpoints from other articles, then fair enough.
Well, actually, okay, let's find. Keep the quiz going. I'm just going to find out what this is all about. Keep going.
Question number six. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yes. Are there more bones in your hand? Or your foot.
Gentlemen,
oh, shoot.
This is democracy.
That was quite close. Mm. I think, Alex, were you first, I think? Maybe?
I mean, I'd say so. Yeah. No, I don't know.
Better get it right.
I have no idea. I'm going to go foot.
It's not foot.
Excellent. Good one.
Robin, what is the answer?
Well, I was genuinely going to guess. Hand, because there's three or four bones in each finger, and there's a bunch
of them. Your phalanges.
Beg your pardon?
Phalanges. They're called, aren't they? Phalanges.
Thank you. I don't know if I deserve that point, though, because it was a yes or no answer, and Alex got it wrong, so...
No, that's the risk you take if you go first.
Works. Yeah, no, yeah. It's, okay. It's understandable.
That's the risk you take, and you were going to say hands anyway, so...
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, so the difference is just one bone, apparently.
Oh,
27
wow.
versus 26.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be so
close.
Not in
my foot.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When you get older, your bones start to fuse, don't they, together? You're born with way more bones than you die with, I guess.
Is that true?
This is true.
I thought it was the other way around. I thought you got more bones as you got older.
Where'd you get more bones
from? I don't know, but I thought like when you're a baby, you have fewer bones and then they more grow as you get bigger.
I'm pretty sure they start to fuse, right?
They start off small. It depends how you cast it. Because like the skull is born as, was it three or four different parts?
Yeah,
and that
plates,
fuses
yeah.
when you're a child. And then if you're counting like arthritic joints where they kind of fuse together and become immobile as becoming one bone, then that would make sense for
right.
older this people to have fewer bones.
An extra quiz to
also,
is a baby's body is born with 300 bones.
There you go.
And they eventually fuse to form 206 bones that adults have.
Wow. Okay.
So
I didn't know
100
I
bones.
Didn't know that. That's mad.
And if you die by amputation, you have even fewer bones on average.
Very true. And if you die as a baby, then you have more bones even though you've died. So all these factors come into play.
Unless you die as a baby by amputation. If you lose enough limbs as a baby, you might measure up to adults.
There are variables, but ultimately babies have more bones than adults.
Wow.
Which is interesting. Anyway, that wasn't the question, was it? It was hands and feet. Anyway, right, next question.
Wait, so what's the score? Is it 3-all now?
Is it four two?
What question are we on?
We've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think it's 4-2.
I think it might be 3-all.
Robin, you got the hand one, Robin, uh-huh. and you also got the coffee.
I swear.
Yes. Alex got closest wins to coastline. He got Barbados. And you got the colour one.
Yeah. So it's
3-all. Sorry,
yeah.
sorry. You're right, Alex. Ooh. Sorry, I'm trying.
Oh, it's tense.
Well, yes, don't accuse me of cheating because I'm being.
Thank you, Alex. That was very decent of you.
You're welcome, Robin.
Question 7. What was the first movie question,
God.
To gross $1 billion at the box office?
This is Democracy Manifest.
I heard Gentlemen first.
Again, this is, I didn't know it, but I had to stop Robin from getting the answer straight away.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to go James Cameron, but $1 billion? I reckon maybe Avatar?
It's not Avatar.
Avatar was the first film to get over $2 billion unadjusted for inflation, but James Cameron's Titanic was the first film.
Wow.
Yes,
to get
Titanic.
Yeah. Sorry, Alex.
It was between
the
two.
On the right lines.
I was thinking Titanic or Avatar. I just didn't think that Titanic would be $1 billion at that point in time. But
$1 billion.
He underestimated. Crazy. Never underestimate James Cameron. That's
never underestimate.
No, I can't wait for Avatar 2, to be honest. Just to see how well it does at the box office.
Yeah.
Can he do it again?
It won't be like that, will it?
No, certainly not.
No. Yeah. I reckon maybe, what, 500 million? Maybe a quarter of it in the current climate?
I think
climate?
You could do 1.5.
Do you reckon, in the current climate, 1.5 billion?
Yeah, because in a year's time, the pandemic will have calmed down. And
didn't we say that
when
last
just
year?
You're just for inflation. I think there's enough people who would go to see... combined with the expansion of cinemas in the Asian market in particular, I think there's enough
people
that would go to see Avatar 2 to give it $1 billion guaranteed, probably $1.5 billion. Get to $2 billion, though, unless something crazy happens.
But then he'll just re-release it in like another year's time, and anyone who didn't see it will see it then.
That's true. Yeah.
Now it's virtual reality, Avatar 2.
Yeah.
Nice. Question number 8. How many British soldiers were killed in the Korean War?
Good question.
What do you say?
I really don't know much about the Korean War.
Korean War usually is focused on US vets,
it is.
Isn't it? Not British.
Did you say this was a closest wins?
Yeah.
Oh, it didn't have to be. It was a question.
No, it makes sense to be closest wins.
This is the bug.
Sauce all over your anus.
Well, thank you. 5,000.
5,000, okay.
It's probably
Alex in advance on 5,000.
Receive manifest. What is.
Well, again, I don't know much about the Korean War, and you're right, it is normally focused on US veterans. So I don't know our deployment or situation with UK troops. So, and the fact that you didn't initially say it was closest wins makes me think this might be a trick. So I'm going to brave it and go 0.
5,000.
Oh, he's done it. He's done it.
Well, I mean, Alex, you are closest, but it was 1,100.
Oh, okay. So my logic was wrong, but Fair enough.
Your logic was wrong, but you're on closer. And only 60,000 saw action. So that's actually a pretty high death rate there.
Wow, yeah. That really is.
It was quite a bloody war. Wasn't it like nearly a million Koreans died? I believe.
Crazy.
Which is horrible. Mostly
but,
from friendly fire.
But you do not hear about that, do you? You don't hear about the British escapades in Korea at all. Not really.
Yeah, there were a few, there was this brief spate of films in the early 50s about it. But yeah, not much. Yeah, it's about
it's rarer. Your people move on to.
Yeah, it's not really a war that people pay much attention to, really. You get countless World War II movies and Vietnam movies, but everyone kind of overlooks Korea.
Well, clearly, I know nothing about it.
I know nothing. Okay, question number 9. Apologies if I mispronounce this to anyone who knows the actual name, but the Masjid al-Haram, or Great Mosque of Mecca, is set to be finished this year. Don't know if it's been delayed or not. We'll find out. But how much is the total build estimated to cost? Was it next year? It might be next year, actually.
Is this closest thing?
Yes. Ha ha.
The estimated build, how much is it?
Yeah.
I mean, well, this is...
Is this anything? Great British pounds, or is it in dollars?
I've got it in dollars, actually. Okay. But I can do a conversion quickly if you fancy.
US or Australian? It. Come on, Martin.
It's USD. USD, I'll have you know. Okay.
Democracy manifest.
I'm going to go for... $3 billion, probably a bit much. Probably very much.
You're doing a Dr. Evil impression there.
Yeah.
About $100 billion.
No, that's crazy. Okay. Is it crazy? All over your
anus. I feel more comfortable saying this now. $2 billion.
Okay. $100 billion.
No, it's not.
$100 billion. Yes.
Oh,
yes,
no. Cost.
What?
Yeah. Dr. Evil works. It's $100 billion. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is that the most expensive?
It's like a complex of mosques.
Wow.
Yes,
it is.
Got to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Only because slave labor was free back in the day.
Yeah, I don't know, I'd laugh then.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what is, I mean, I guess it's a lot of stone. I guess that's way more expensive than building skyscrapers.
Loads of stone, mate. Tons of stone.
Yeah, it must be massive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, look it up. It's pretty impressive.
How long has it been
amazing
construction for?
I might have to bring this to the table next week because I do not actually know. But it has the capacity... So they're basically redoing this particular mosque. They're doing it up, let's just say.
doing it up.
Yeah, but it's basically like the main point of Mecca, the main part of Mecca. And that's how much over time it's cost to build.
$100 billion.
It dates back thousands of years. But yeah, all the updates and improvements, and they're re-renovating it and stuff. It's costing $100 billion overall. Which is mad.
That is a lot of money.
It is.
It's good for them. And if it keeps people employed, that's good.
Exactly. There we go. So the question...
that's Alex with a 5-4 lead, I think.
5-4. Blimey, we're going into question number 10.
Actually, is that right?
Pretty sure.
I think that's right, yeah.
Okay.
Question number 10. The head of which social media platform stepped down this week?
This is Democracy Manifest. What?
I don't know the answer, but I had to jump in. Head of which social media platform? I don't know. Is it Snapchat?
It's not Snapchat. Robin, any ideas?
Good question.
I haven't heard this.
He's stepping down.
Yes, I feel like there might be headlines if... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sauce all over your anus. Delish.
I know Bezos recently stepped down as the technical, like the CEO of Amazon. So has Zuckerberg stepped down from being in charge of Facebook now that it's Meta?
No. Oh,
that's such a good guess, though. I so thought you'd have that.
No. Or at least he hasn't this week. He has, I missed it.
Oh, yeah. Am I allowed to buzz in again?
Yeah, it's open again after the first guess.
Twitter fella. What's his name?
You can't just say
it. It is.
Jack Dorsey.
I said which platform?
Oh, yeah, you did.
Yeah, Twitter.
Yeah.
Thank you. Twitter. That was very generous.
Jack Dorsey. Yeah, Jack Dorsey. Stepping down. Yeah, gosh. He announced it today, in fact.
Wow.
Added that one in. Yeah.
Bloody there Jack Dorsey.
There we go. So we require the bonus question.
Hey.
When was the last time we ever required the bonus question?
It's been a while, yeah.
It has been a while, yeah. No, congratulations to both of you. All 10 questions answered, which is a good indictment of your knowledge.
That's true. A 5-all is better than a 1-all.
Absolutely.
It's also a solid statement for your quiz, Martin. Well done.
Yeah.
No, well, too easy, perhaps.
No, not too easy. Just
too many
just
close
right.
wins.
Pitch just right. Yeah.
Okay, the bonus question. Of course, with the bonus question, it has to be closest wind. What is the average number of alcoholic drinks an average British man drinks on Christmas Day?
Oh,
I worded that badly. Apologies.
Is this in units or?
It's a very good question. Yeah, the average number of units.
I've gone for the equivalent of pints, okay? Like medium strength pint.
Oh, so you want it in pints?
Yeah, go for pints.
Okay. Oh, no. Okay, that's not... Oh, as a pint is 2 units? I'm going to guess a man drinks an average of 15 pints.
15 pints, okay.
Yeah.
An average of 15 pints on Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day.
That, I feel like it's got to be lower than that.
Is democracy manifest?
If it's an average, you've got people that don't drink, though. No?
True.
I would say... Do you know what? Maybe I've misunderstood a question, but I'm going to be bold again and go 5. Five pints on average.
The average is 6 pints.
Yes!
No! Very close, Alex. 15 pints, Robin, the average person.
I don't know.
Are you okay, Robin?
Me. I was going to go
Christmas
units.
Day like, Robin?
Then, well, mine is never that exciting, hence I massively overestimated.
5 pints for 9 a.m.
Well, no, he said the average male, and I thought, well, men will
15
probably,
pints.
Men will probably drink more, so, you know. Because you said, I was thinking units. I was thinking they might have 30 units. If there's 2 units in a pint, they might have like 2 bottles of wine, which is a lot.
I guess.
You know? Yeah. I mean, over the course of the day, I feel like you do kind of, I mean, if you're drinking on Christmas Day, you do kind of just drink all day, don't you? But just space it out.
I see, and you'd have spirits. You have a whiskey as a Christmas present, you know.
Yeah.
And you might drink half a bottle, in which case you've got...
I imagine a lot of people will be drinking 15 pints. But it's just as an average, like you say, with some people drinking nothing, there have to be a lot of people drinking like 25 pints.
There you go. You deservedly won that question, Alex, and won the quiz because you used your head.
very
Another
good.
Reason to thank Roger alcohol. Alex. Thanks, alcohol.
He says with a clear bottle of indescript liquid. Yes, water. Yeah. Well done, both of you.
Well, thank you.
Fantastic.
That was a good quiz.
Very good quiz.
Yeah,
very good
you,
quiz.
Martin.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah, it was. Very well answered quiz, I meant. I'm not bigging myself up. It's a
very good quiz.
Just a great quiz. The best quiz I've ever written. Yeah.
The best quiz.
I hope everyone listening to us or watching us at home. Has endured the length of this quiz quite
blimey. it went on a bit, but
too many interesting questions.
It
that's
was.
The problem.
Yeah,
well, that's it. Thank you very much. Thank you. If you're not too bored of us, then of course, as we said earlier, you can head on over to the Patreon page, which is patreon.com/justinteresting. to check out a whole plethora of additional videos.
A plethora.
Of a little more interesting videos, which we've created over the last number of years. So do go there. Let us know what you think. And you can also join up with our Discord community and chat to us and have your questions answered on the podcast as well. That's something that we're getting into again. I asked a question earlier on today. Haven't checked it. So that'll be on next week's. But yeah, so there's plenty going on there. So do check us out if you have the desire to do so. Any last words, gentlemen, before we head off into the sunset? Oh, my cat's just fallen off. Oh, dear, that's embarrassing. Oh, he's just standing up now because he's back up. It's fine. Anyway, gents, have a lovely night. And we'll see you next time. My cat just fell off the chair. That was really quite funny.
See you next time, everyone. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.